This is Paul Siegel. You're listening to Wandering DMs. Wandering DMs is broadcast live at 1 p.m. Eastern on twitch.tv/wanderingdms and youtube.com/wanderingdms/live. And now, on with the show.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Wandering DMs. I'm Paul.
And I'm Dan, and today on Wandering DMs, we're going to be talking about lit RPG, the literary genre where role-playing mechanics drive the narrative. And we'll be thinking about where did the term come from, what early works set the tone, all that and more today on Wandering DMs.
Before we get into today's discussion, I will remind you, as always, at the end of the show, we will be hosting our after-party chat. That is a live video chat hosted by Dan and I on our Discord server, and you can join in. Just visit our Patreon at patreon.com/wanderingdms, join at any tier, and you'll get an invite to our Discord server. Get your account all set up and ready, because at the end of the show, maybe 10 minutes after the end of the show, we will be there to host a live video chat with all of our patrons.
We love that. So if people can get on there, and I don't think we're the most experienced people with lit RPG. So if folks have other thoughts, I would love to hear their valuable insights into lit RPG. You know, Paul, at least one person on our Discord server after we announced this particular show asked the question, is this just going to be a couple of old guys yelling at the clouds that things are different than our day? And, you know, my response was partly.
Well, I am not here. I am not here to dump on this newfangled genre because, frankly, this started for me because I started reading the Dungeon Crawler Carl series by Matt Dinneman. Not something I would have thought to pick up myself, but was encouraged to read it for, other tangential reasons. And I found myself really loving it. And I found myself thinking back of like other books that fall into that same category. And I would say there's quite a few good ones, in my opinion, both modern that are trying to fit the genre or just happen to fall into the genre, and some historic ones that I think, wow, if that name had existed back then, they would have called this a lit RPG. I'm not here to dump on it. I actually have a fondness for this. I think it's a very interesting new kind of weird subgenre, and I think it's really interesting where it comes from, and just like I would love to just talk about like how the mechanics of role-playing games have infested our modern daily lives and language. Interesting.
Yes, I think that's great. You know, just at the top, like I will never not be surprised at the phrase level up being like a core piece of language.
Yeah.
And I see that in, you know, advertisements for, you know, beverages, and I see it in the name of bars, you know, and that has become such a core thing that I have to, you know, point it out to people. Well, that comes directly from D&D originally, because people don't track that it's, you know, gaming origin. And there's a lot of stuff.
It's fascinating. I feel like there's a lot of terminology like that. That back in the day, like in the day when I was playing D&D in the mid '80s, certainly there were a lot of concepts that I would have had to explain to new players that these days that don't require explanation. And in fact, what's more interesting is to tell players, "Oh, this originated in D&D." To have them go, "Oh, really?
Yes.
Like,
yes.
Right." Like, let's just talk about like the concept of hit points or health or a measurable, you know, numeric value of your health, right? Like that's, you know, where the hell's that come from, Dan?
It's funny because, you know, it's similar to certain movies that set the precedent for brand new concepts. And if you go back to them nowadays, they almost look cliche. But they were the ones that came up, that initiated these revolutionary ideas that changed the world. It's hard to recapture just how groundbreaking it was at the time, because it's matriculated and it's everywhere now. So I totally feel that.
Fascinating. So let's talk about this. I feel like, Dan, you know, at the beginning of this show, we should really be trying to define for folks what the hell it is we're even talking about here. What is lit RPG? Because I feel like I've mentioned a few times to some people that this was going to be our topic today, and they're like, I don't know what that is.
How about you take a shot at it, and then I may possibly come in with some caveats, possibly, from my limited understanding. Yeah.
My understanding of what lit RPG is it's a genre of fiction, so novels or short stories that are being written with the concept that a game or game mechanics are key to the plot and setting and are referred to directly by the characters interfacing with those game mechanics.
Right. And so I think in short, you could say, are the game stats diegetic? So, you know, we have in our history, we have quite a lot of literature of the idea of maybe people falling into a game world, which is not exactly what we're talking about. So you can go back at least as early as Quag Keep. I feel like a lot of my feelings about that come from like maybe comics or maybe movies. So for me, like the die move, like maybe Tron would be this, like you fall into a game world. That's not enough. For what we're talking about, lit RPGs, you need the actual game statistics to be visible and manipulable and knowable by the main character within the actual story. So, I feel like maybe Tron's in that kind of zone. The in comic books, like in the X-Men series, there's the Mojo world where the characters might fall into. And for me, I feel like the lit RPG genre is maybe talking, like when they say RPG, and I tend to forget this, maybe they're talking really more about video game RPGs. They're not necessarily talking about tabletop RPGs, which is still my record. When I see RPG, my first thought is TTRPGs, which is not everybody's shared understanding of that. So we might more be talking about video game RPGs more than tabletop stuff, really. Perhaps?
I feel like that's a fine distinction, because of course I feel like most video game RPGs themselves are drawing from an initial inspiration of tabletop gaming, right? This is, you know, computer programming enthusiasts from that era when D&D was just brand new, wanting to translate that experience into the digital world.
Its own thing,
of course, I'm sure. But that said, you know, coming from the world of video games, of somebody who's been professionally making video games for 2.5 decades, I would say the idea of encountering someone who's working on a video game RPG who does not play tabletop RPG basically unheard of, right? Frankly, there was a whole period of my life where my D&D table was built entirely out of coworkers, and if I had brought up the conversation with coworkers about Dungeons and Dragons, the question was not, have you ever played Dungeons and Dragons? The question was simply, well, which edition do you currently play? That was much more, and I remember actually kind of formally doing this at one video game company where I was, we were talking with Wizards of the Coast about using their IP for something, and so it was desirable for everyone at the company to have a background, so I did a whole presentation on the history of Dungeons and Dragons, and through the course of that, I'm addressing a company of like 100 or people or so, and polling them live from stage. Okay, here's this version. Who remembers this one? Show of hands, right? And it was just a very funny, informal poll that I was doing of my audience to get like, oh, yep, I remember that from when I was a kid. I remember that book, right? And I think the two are inexorably tied, which is, I guess, you know, does modern lit RPG differentiate between being inspired by tabletop games versus video games? I don't know. I'm sure there's lots of people who want to debate. Does it belong in this category?
I mean, they're certainly tied at the hip, right? They're certainly tied at the hip, and clearly that's where the most of our understanding of the stat, like what are the stats, they probably come from D&D. Now, my very, very limited slice of lit RPG is there's usually some device, you know, how does the main character interact with those stats? Well, there's going to be some device in the literature that allows them to view it and see it and know about it. And it's probably going to be like some kind of a narrator is going to be talking to them, or floating tooltips are going to appear within the story, like actual text boxes or menus are going to actually show up in front of them. So those kinds of UI elements,
you think that's
required I recognize.
Are you saying that that's required to classify lit RPG?
From what I've seen, and I guess there's debate among aficionados, from what I've seen, there are, and the genre is much larger than I would have guessed. Maybe like all subcultures are like this, but are there hundreds or thousands of you know, maybe web novels written in this genre, perhaps? And from what I've seen, the real aficionados will actually level rather severe complaints if they don't have heavy-duty numerical stats that they're dealing with as part of the narrative. Like they'll say, well, I like this book because it's very heavy on the stats. This book here, it's very light on the stats, and that's not really what I'm looking for. Or this book here actually didn't have any stats at all. I'm very upset that someone's qualifying this as lit RPG. So I think for the people really in depth on it, they want to see that.
I want to pick at this a little bit, Dan. This is fun, and I'm going to go through some examples here.
Great.
This is very interesting.
Great.
So I think like one of the novels historically that we can look back in and say, like, is this lit RPG mm-hmm. or not? That came up on our Discord server a lot is Joel Rosenberg's Guardians of the Flame series. I might not be right here from when I was like 12. so in this novel, in this series, and we've talked about this series on this channel before. Dan, you and I both agree that like the first three are fantastic, and then it kind of peters out from there, but like the first three novels in the series, very good. You know, it follows the trope that you were discussing before of players in the real world of a tabletop role-playing game get sucked into the fictional world. They are conscious of the fact that this is a fictional world run by game mechanics, but now it's real, and they are mm-hmm. trying to navigate that. And I agree, in your original precept, you said that is not necessarily the hallmark of lit RPG. I agree, my research suggests that belongs to a broader category, possibly called game lit, where
Agreed.
Themes of games are present. Nevertheless, I do feel like this one is got to be edging into the border of, I would call this lit RPG. What do you think, Dan?
I feel like I would need to call that game lit, to my understanding. And I've also read, I was a big fan when it first came out, again, a young age, clearly connected to my beloved Dungeons and Dragons, so I snapped it up. I think I read about three or four of the novels. Rosenberg might have written five or six by the time he got done, I think. And I don't have my copy here in my current apartment, so I couldn't leaf through it the same way you do. So I think that I would need to, from what I understand, I would need to leaf through it. And once they're in the game world, do they actually talk about hit points or levels or spell points? And to my recollection, I don't think they do. Am I forgetting that?
They don't really get into numerical values, but they certainly talk about like a Vancian style magic system. They talk about memorizing spells and how many spells per day do you get, etc. They talk a little bit in the beginning about what level their characters are and what abilities that bestowed. And they also hit on like my character is good at this skill, but I personally am not good at this skill. And I think even the main character at certain points has to put himself in a mental state of like, I have to lean on the game system to let my character do a thing that I, the real human, could never do.
Okay. All right. That last bit is actually a interesting
tell for me. That's the tell for me of like this cognizance that like I and my character are two different entities, and they coexist.
Interesting. Now you make an interesting point there, mentioning Vancian magic. So the mechanic in original D&D, and they would refer to it as memorizing, comes right out of Jack Vance's Dying Earth stories. And it's interesting that he, you know, in the first Dying Earth story, Vance absolutely has a mentor wizard character outright say that magic is basically mathematics. And if you really understand, you need to understand this arcane art that some call mathematics, and that's where all the true power comes from. And then your main wizard will have, well, I can, how many spells can I, you know, put in my brain for this particular adventure day? Maybe perhaps 3 or 4 of the top level spell. Now, you don't ever see the mathematics, right, in Vance. You don't actually lay out points or mathematical proofs. So I suppose you might just pitch out the theoretical question, does Vance count as lit RPG? So he does set a particular number of spells you can memorize. He does talk about the mathematics of magic without ever going into it more deeply than that. It's left as a mystery. Does Vance count as lit RPG? I kind of want to say no. And I kind of want to put, I still would feel like I would want to veer towards Guardians of the Flame being game lit. Because you're not literally seeing, like, the characters aren't literally seeing points floating in front of them. It, and to my, you know, I think it, some people need that.
Yeah.
To qualify.
I hear that. I totally hear that, right? So, like, the one thing I was kind of mentally comparing it to, and I apologize, I don't have this to put up on screen, but I have my copy here of The Sleeping Dragon, the first one of the book Guardians of the Flame series. And then I have, of course, the Gord novels. Okay?
Nice.
Have you read the Gord novels, Dan?
I definitely have, possibly more than once.
Okay, yep. Now that, I would say Gord, clearly not lit RPG, right? Definitively in game lit. This is inspired by Dungeons & Dragons. It's set in Gary Gygax's world that he ran Dungeons & Dragons in. It's written by Gary Gygax. But are the characters in the game conscious of being in an alternate reality game world that is adjudicated by rules? And they are not, right? This is like, I was looking at the Wikipedia article for Lit RPG. Forgive me for using that as a primary source. Probably not the best. But this line jumped out at me. It says, typically the main character in Lit RPG novel is consciously interacting with the game or game-like world and attempting to progress within it. It's the latter half that where I think this one kind of fails a little bit. Because are they trying to progress? Right, they're conscious of levels, they're conscious of power and abilities and the give and take. Right, I'm going to spoil a little bit in this novel. Apologies for folks who have not managed to read this novel in the past 30 years since it's been out. Right, in the very beginning, there is one of the main characters, like, mentally falls into just like letting his character do naturally what his character does, which is a thief, and he starts picking someone's pocket. He gets caught and is executed. Right, characters killed off, like within the first couple of chapters, he dies because he has a moment where his brain clicks and he goes, oh my God, what am I doing? Right, like I'm not this thief in this world who knows how to pick pockets. I am this other person in the modern day. I'm a student, and it causes a jarring moment that he fumbles and misses the chance to actually successfully pick the pocket and gets caught and gets executed. And so for like that, I'm like, that is clearly consciousness of the game-like world. Interacting with the game world, but the advancement bit is missing. Is advancement necessary to fall into this genre?
My understanding is, like, actually seeing stats, like actually seeing stats in front of you is the guideline that some people use. Now, the other thing I'll say about Guardians of the Flame is that as the series progresses, they veer away from that. So the in the very first book, it's very much in your face that we are people from the real world and we were playing a game. And as the novels progress, that kind of gets sublimated and you don't talk about that so much anymore. And you are these, as I recall, once you get to the second book, you don't have that same struggle between the player and the character anymore. They're just in this world. And I also think of the webcomic Order of the Stick, which is still ongoing and I love. And when they started out, when he started out, and here's the very first episode of Order of the Stick. And the whole gag here is very satirical, is we are converting additions. So we're actually, we're in mid-fight with some goblins. We actually convert additions, and the characters are talking about, I'm getting extra skill points, and my ability to be stable went up. One character's weaponry went down in size, and they're all completely cognizant of that. And I think the middle frame, the elf character specifically says, I believe we are being converted to the new 3.5 edition. So to me, when specific numbers pop up, that would qualify this as lit RPG. But again, that trends away over the many years that Burlew's been publishing this. So they, once in a while, they'll have a joke that pops out about, I don't know, the requirements for a spell, maybe. But again, it started out as a, you know, talking about that. And then we kind of live more and more in the world as the time goes on. And that is really the engine that drives what's happening nowadays. So it's interesting that for both of those examples that I'm very familiar with, they were close to it to begin and then kind of discarded it over time.
That is interesting, right, to see it meld away like that, right? Now, in Burlew's case, I think he's been on record of saying that, like, you know, that at some point he had to lean into the characters and their you know, relationships and those stories,
right?
Because that is much more evergreen than making, you know, D&D edition jokes, right? And I get that, right? Like, at a certain point, the well's going to run dry of, like, yes, it's funny, they understand that they're playing D&D and we're going to poke fun at the rules of D&D. But, you know, nevertheless, those were always my favorite panels, right? The bit with talking about needing to level up and that, you know, oh, we need to go down a level to go up a level.
Right. And I really enjoy the wizard's familiar that started off being perpetually forgotten about and therefore not physically there until you remembered it and then it popped into existence. And then about halfway through the run, he discarded that gag. And the familiar was actually there all the time as a character with particular observations communicating with the rest of them. And to me, that was like a real hallmark of the switch in Burlew's work between game gags and kind of abandoning them. Yeah. But I think that if you're in the modern lit RPG field, I feel like you would not want to do that because I see people kind of expressing bitter disappointment. If they pick up a book that they're being told is lit RPG, they really want to, the reader wants to engage with the statistics, with the numbers, kind of like a baseball aficionado. I want to see the batting average and I want to see the on-base percentage. That's part of what they want if they're being sold in a lit RPG product these days, to my understanding.
So would you classify Order of the Stick as lit RPG? I mean, granted, maybe it's the whole fact that it's a webcomic rather than a novel is maybe a little stretching it a bit, but
and look, that's my primary experience. It tends of things in that kind of vein tended. So I hope people will forgive me using comics or movies. So based on that first episode, absolutely, that's clearly comic lit RPG. Nowadays, I don't think so. I think it's moved away from that.
Yeah, I agree. It's that clearly. Yeah, I mean. That's interesting. So Dan, your vote is that Guardians of the Flame not lit RPG, Order of the Stick is lit RPG.
To begin with, pretty much, yeah. Order of the Stick, I would say to begin with. Let me read a couple. I'm going to read a couple of chat comments, like on the discourse about this kind of thing. So I've seen some people talking about this on social media recent months, which is where, frankly, I first heard the term relatively recently in frequent months. So I've seen one person, and I think this was on Blue Sky, saying a lot of readers have gotten really obnoxious about how all fantasy must be gameable by the protagonist. In fantasy in general, they now expect the main character to be directly interacting and knowledgeable about the mechanics of their world as it's a game, and they're actually irritated if they don't see that and they don't themselves know about it. And the other thing, and I think this goes towards the Vancian magic, is I've seen multiple people all agreeing that there is a particular field of critique in magic systems whereby if you don't lay out a mathematically codified system of magic for your game world, that's now critiqued as underdeveloped and unacceptable. So whereas our literature background, like the pulp fantasy literature, is accustomed to being, well, the magic is mysterious, it's partly unknown, it's something these wizards that are normally not your main character know about, we, the reader and the protagonist, you know, like Conan or somebody, don't really know what the wizards are capable. So it's this murky, dark threat. And for many readers nowadays, that's unacceptable. That's highly unacceptable. And it's interesting because, I mean, when D&D started, one of the main novelties was applying statistics to all this stuff. Like formally applying statistics to the monsters and the characters and the spells and ranking one greater than another. And on the one hand, I think there were some people at the time were like, this is suspicious, this is suspect, that you would want to take this mystery, the mystery of magic, and formalize it. And me as a player, I'm like, well, how else are you going to run a game with it? You need something for what I recognize as a game. I need some way of codifying that. And so it is really interesting to see that cultural codification now come into the literature such that some people actually demand it in the middle of their fantasy RPG, which is, I'm kind of grappling with that.
And I'm surprised to say that it seems like you are more plugged into the online culture around this and the debates about what does and doesn't belong. I definitely came in here much more prepared to just talk about the high level theoretical of how one form of media influences the next. Fascinating. How are fascinating different directions we've come at this topic.
How much of the current, you know, recognized lit RPG have I read? So little. Like I can recognize the threads in some of these other media that I've watched. I've just read a little bit of Dungeon Crawler Carl. So if you have read the whole thing, I'm happy to hear your observations of the entirety of the work, because I've just read a tiny little bit.
I've just started book four, so I'm making my way through it. Okay. How many are there? I couldn't tell you off the top of my head, but certainly more than four.
Maybe there's currently six, like that. And the seventh one is coming out in just a couple weeks on September 23rd.
Now, I mean, so, okay, so for folks who haven't read it, quick synopsis, right? This is a post-apocalyptic book where, like, modern current day Earth is near decimated by alien forces. The small percentage of the population that remains alive is shoved into an underground dungeon to compete in an almost like Running Man-esque competition of, you know, that feels very much like an MMO, right? Like a computer-based RPG, right? You have all the concepts of HUDs and stats and skills that are being trained. They have a virtual inventory, literally he's picking up items and putting it into, quote, his inventory, so it disappears from his own reality and goes into a pocket space. And he's leveling up. He's consciously trying to play the game, play the mechanics to get better at, to survive, granted. Because every time the crawlers go down a level, the previous level collapses on itself, killing anyone who has remained there. And there's constantly a number being displayed in the HUD of the number of people still alive. And it's constantly going down. It's a little dark. A little dark.
Yes.
but very funny as well, right? Very humorous. But it's a much better book than I was expecting. Let me put it that way.
Okay.
And it seems to have caught on, right? Because I've heard, right, there's all kinds of derivative work now in process, right? Some kind of television show, I've heard that there's a tabletop RPG being developed about.
Right. Yeah. This is, yes, there is. there's a tabletop RPG.
Talk about the snake eating its own tail. Holy crap.
Right.
How does it come full circle?
And to be clear, right, at the outset, it absolutely explicitly calls out Dungeons and Dragons. So in chapter one of the first book, it totally says, boy, this feels like something like Pathfinder or Dungeons and Dragons, which is pretty interesting that he says Pathfinder first. But he says this feels like Pathfinder or Dungeons and Dragons at the moment that he sees the first, you know, instructional text pop up and walks into the dungeon the first time. So very self-aware, certainly. And I would say, based on my brief reading, there's some kind of game stats talk on maybe about half the pages. So it like shows up in boldface and you get some kind of text and like, here's the new item you got and it's times two this and it's plus one that and it gives you 50% of this. Maybe about half the pages, there's some kind of stats talk. Would you agree?
I totally agree. Yep. Yeah, it is constantly present. It is something that he's always working on because, of course, he's trying to improve himself or his game self, right? His game stats in order to survive. Now, how sensible is it, right? I don't know. I'm not the type of person who sits down and tries to map out, like, is this following reasonable rules that make sense, or are there, you know, inconsistencies? But yeah, it is definitely constantly referred to.
One of the things that jumped out at me at the outset is it's an original, like, instructions. I think it's like, so you're dealing with an 18 level world dungeon, I think is what it's said at the outset. And at the beginning, there's, like 150,000 entrances into the dungeon. And then there's for each level down, there's going to be half as many rounding up. And the fact that he made the point about like this math is rounding up when you calculate the division is so gameable and so you know, technically specific that I was like, wow, that we are really really committing very awarely committing to the specifics of the math.
I would expect that, honestly. You know, that probably Dinnaman has extensive notes about how even though Carl, the main character, of course, is constantly trying to learn, right? He's constantly trying to figure out how does this work, right? Because it's not exposed to him. He's expected to just play and engage with it, but he's constantly trying to figure it out to his own advantage. To which end, another fascinating element that's in this book that I have not seen elsewhere, right, is that they're bug fixing. So in this case, really leaning into the video gamification here, there's regular announcements of, we have discovered this exploit and fixed it. Going forward, the game will now behave in this way instead of that way. Right? And so there are moments where the main character is discovered like, oh, this probably shouldn't work to my advantage in this way, but I'm going to keep mum about it lest they find out because I want to exploit it.
Okay.
Which of course, is a very, you know, anyone who's played video games, especially like online video games, knows how common this is in you know, the video game playing space.
That's clever.
So that absolutely delighted me, right? This idea that there's sentience out there that is constantly trying to fix the bugs in the game. A lot of it revolves around, frankly, like one of his big things is trying to figure out the inventory system, which is, you know, absolutely.
Yes.
Like he discovers anything I can pick up, I can immediately just pop into my inventory. And because his character is a little bit MacGyver-y, he's just like, at a certain point, he realizes all material is good material, and he just starts looting everything. If he can pick it up, he will put it into his inventory. Which, of course, means his inventory is just full, just chock full, infinitely full of trash. Which is very funny to me as a game developer, because, of course, I feel like this is something that I have dealt with in video games, of like, oh god, the player's inventories are getting too big, it's exceeding the memory allotment in the database, we need to like do something to drain these inventory items or cap it at a certain level or whatnot. It cannot truly be infinite.
Interesting.
So as a game developer, that part delights me.
And as a D&D referee, like I had the problem, I early on I had, like I wasn't tracking encumbrance. And therefore my players were looting absolutely everything and every piece of armor and every piece of weapon. And were, you know, what would take an elephant to carry out. And it wasn't until, you know, after my players were cheating in that way that I started to really lean into encumbrance. Two things about Dungeon Crawler Carl that I will praise. One is that it's kind of clever that when he first steps into an area, like when he first steps in the dungeon, he gets this overwhelming flood of notifications, right? So a whole bunch of things yeah. all of a sudden happen, yeah. right? And he has this flood of screens that's way too much information to for him to actually process. And in the book, it actually goes for 3 pages. You actually get 3 pages of unparsable notifications, which is a legitimately clever observation yep. about not super yep. well-developed games. That they didn't think about that new player experience, and they are overwhelmed by all the friggin' updates and awards and ribbons you just got for taking your first step. That's kind of clever. And the other thing that's very clever, of course, is that Carl himself has a close associate who is a cat. And the cat starts off as a real-world normal cat, and very early on, he gets a level up that it affects the cat. To me, kind of like a wand of wonder, and it's described as, well, it could be bad, it could be neutral, it could be horrible, it could be negative, who knows? And then they're all stunned that they get the best possible result, and the cat turns into a talking, superhuman, completely off-the-chart charisma cat that will be his associate from then on. And because of the high charisma, everybody else recognizes the cat as the leader of the party. So A, who doesn't love cats? We here at Wandering DMs are big cat people, right? The internet loves a good cat. So clever to make a cat a major, even the team leader. And then if I look at, I think, derivative works, right? I think other authors go, I got to have some kind of pet ally. So my lit RPG main character is going to have a dog, going to have a wolf, going to have a horse, right? Going to have a bird.
Yep.
You got to have some kind of beloved pet companion. Well chosen.
I don't know what print of the book you might be looking at, Dan, but my copy of the first book that I read fairly recently in the back, I think maybe includes a very nice heartfelt little comment of like, this is the fourth printing or fifth printing or whatever printing it was, right? And he's talking about like, I never imagined that the book would get this big. And he talks a little bit about like the major themes of the book, which is really like heartfelt and delightful about how it's ultimately a book about hope, which is surprising, right? Okay. And I would say that is some of the redeeming, like when I first heard about this, I was like, oh geez, it's, you know, it's gonna be corny and silly. And like some of those themes actually come across, frankly, I would say some of those themes of like, this is about hope and in an absolutely, you know, terrible, terrible situation. And then he ends with a comment where he says, of course, you know, kind of ridiculous for me to be saying something so, you know, sincere in a book about a guy who runs around in his underwear talking to his cat. And
you know,
like he rides that line, I think, really well between just like actually quite funny comedic content and like actually like very serious. You know what? This would be awful if you were in this situation like this. It would be truly terrible. I don't. Perhaps I just love that because like it kind of echoes some of the stuff I've written for Fearful Ends. Anybody who's maybe played the Mazes and Monsters game. That I've written for Fearful Ends that involves being transported into a fantasy realm. And the main thing I'm playing with is, as much as we like play for fun and enjoyment of like high adventure and excitement, if you actually contemplate what like a real life human today would how they would deal in a D&D setting fantasy, it's horrific. It's truly, truly terrible. You would not want to be there.
I read that someone saying that the books get darker as they go on. Is that your experience as you get up to book 4?
That's a good question. I've been kind of mainlining them from one book to the next, so sometimes my brain although it does help that basically it's one level per book, so that's, you know, presumably there will be 18 books, I'm guessing? I don't know. But, yeah, so that
interesting.
At least provides a line. Thematically, do they get darker per book? I don't know. I feel like it's pretty dark right from the get-go.
Okay.
That first book is.
I've heard him planning on It's interesting because I've heard him planning on 10 books, roughly. Again, number 7 is just coming out this month.
It talks about how there are 18 levels, but it also, it's very early established that there are certain points where you can get out or you can stop playing.
Got it.
So it's plausible that the main character will hit a certain level and just like nope out. But I don't know.
Right.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see how it goes. And I can't even spoil it because we don't know.
Right. There was some game I played years and years ago that was, I don't know, like 25 levels, but at some point you could skip like 7 of the levels. And when I discovered that, I'm just delighted. Oh my God, I can just skip a third of the game by finding this particular secret that I just found. I'm still jazzed about it decades later. So maybe that'll be part of it.
Who knows?
Yeah.
It's a fascinating series and I'm enjoying it. So I'm in. At least for now.
Many of the popular series in this genre, and I guess there's like among the top ones are, we're talking about Dungeon Crawler Carl, there's Defiance of the Fall, there's Path of Ascension, there's He Who Fights Monsters, I think are some of the top ones. They tend to be huge series. So many of these series are going 10 novels deep or more, or just like, I'm just going to keep writing books as long as anyone's reading any of them. And I'm going to confess for me that I have never in my life read a series that's 10 books long. And, such things did exist. That's not brand new in the world. I can think of the Gore series, which I have not read none of them, but that was influential to Dave Arneson. Went for many, many novels.
Not a Terry Pratchett fan, huh, Dan?
I'm not. I haven't.
Yeah.
And, as I hit a slightly older age and rediscovered the original pulp magazine fantasy that was really on Gygax's mind when he did write D&D, Conan, Elric, Fat from the Green Mouse, or all this kind of stuff. I've said it before, I'm way more enthusiastic about the short story format. I'm much more enthusiastic about a tight story that hits the bullets and hits your themes and gets out. And I've become, that was part of my education when I was doing creative writing in college. And I've come back around to it, and I really appreciate the short stories more than when, for business purposes, they felt that they had to blow it up to a larger size. And so I've read, trilogies. I'll confess I don't read a lot of novel length fiction anymore. That particular trend is certainly opposite of my preferences.
Let me talk about another series then, which is fascinating, because this is where, when I first heard of Dungeon Crawler Carl, this was my main point of reference that I was expecting it to be like, which is Robert Bevan's Critical Failures. Are you aware of this series, Dan?
I guess I'm not.
Okay, so this is a series that is basically the standard trope of players of playing a D&D game get sucked into the fantasy world. Oh my God, it's real. And it's played for a very puerile humor, basically, consistently throughout the books.
Okay.
It's quite funny. I've read quite a few of them. I think I enjoy them. But they're definitely... I have a copy of the back of the book. I'm just going to read you the back, which, as you can see, is barely a couple sentences, which just says, "What if you and your friends got to live the game for real? What if you and your friends were assholes? Join Tim, Dave, Julian, and Cooper as they wine stab and shit their way through a hostile fantasy game world." So there you go. It is absolutely played for ridiculous humor. And again, in this, I would argue that this is, I would personally think of this as lit RPG. They're highly aware that they're in the game. They're going to game that. They try to exploit the rules as often as possible to their advantage. Right. They're very angry at the person who sent them into this world, and they want to get out. But they know the game system very well, and so they just exploit it left, right, and center. I would say, from what I can tell on the internet, there are now 9 books in this series, but interestingly, he's also written collections of short stories. He originally came out with a book called D6, which was a collection of 6 short stories set in the same universe. Okay, he's now published 2D6, 3D6, 4D6, 5D6.
Oh,
8D6. He has cut a huge quantity of short stories that he has published in this setting.
Okay. Kudos. Yeah. Kudos. Nice. Yeah. Okay. That's good stuff. When did this originally come out? Critical Failures would be like what year?
That is such a good question. I think it's got to be at least 5-6 years old at this point. Let's see if I can find a date in my copy of the book. More than that. Copyright 2012. First one's
now,
coming out.
Interestingly,
maybe years ago.
Right, this lit RPG genre that we're talking about, the name, I mean, many of us are unaware of it. I wasn't aware of it until a couple months ago. The name of it is only about 10 years old. So it was 1 year later than what you're saying there, Paul. It was 2000, to my understanding, it was 2013 that a Russian publishing house called Exmo declared we're going to have like a competition, actually, for a genre, for something we're going to publish that we're going to call lit RPG. So there's actually a bit of a game. You have to enter a contest and submit a proposal for this in-game genre that we are identifying that we're going to publish. And so it's only been since 2013 that this has actually been a phrase that people could use to talk about. Some of our influences that we're talking about certainly vastly predate that. Quag Keep came out in the 70s, right? Quag Keep came out in 1978 with the first, I want to call that gamelet, falling specific real world players falling into a game world specifically. But the lit RPG has only been around about 10 years as a identifiable thing. Now, and I want to say, look, I want to praise the author of Dungeon Crawler, Carl, for that appendix note that you're talking about there, Paul, because I say this a lot, like I fear Dungeons and Dragons becoming too self-referential. I've said it before. I kind of don't want the game just talking about the game. For these art forms to be valuable, I want them to be talking about something else outside themselves, whether it's, you know, mythology that all people can recognize, or some kind of human, you know, challenges that we face, something outside itself. So I fear when I start touching lit RPG, I certainly have this fear that that's going to run up against specifically one of the things that I fight against in gaming about becoming just purely consuming itself. So if he feels that he has some heartfelt theme that he's working through with this, I think that's really important, frankly. And I got major kudos to him, because that's the minimum that I would want to see for something to be really valuable.
It's it's fascinating. What an interesting kind of paradox or at least a sort of weird push-pull here that you're describing, because I think what we started with was talking about things like Rich Berlew focusing more on the characters and pulling away from what we would classify as a lit RPG theme.
Right.
But meanwhile, but you do want like some larger message or purpose or something, right? Because you're right. If you just hung the fiction on like, let's, you know, play with the idea of players are aware of a game system, right? It's not really long lasting, right? It doesn't. I think I agree with you, right? You need a little of both, right? And I think that's sort of the trap that Berlew maybe fell into, is that he started with make fun of the game system, and then was like, oh no, the characters are what's interesting, and he shifted rather than trying to find a way to incorporate.
Yes. Yes. I think we should also say that like a lot of this stuff, and maybe this is all literature nowadays, a lot of this stuff starts off as fan fiction. Right. So the traditional book publishing industry is in a very, you know, precipitous place. And a lot of this stuff gets published initially on the web or self-published, and then maybe it gets picked up places. So if you look at lit RPG, it's not going to be too long before someone mentions Royal Road, which is a site for publishing, producing developing initially fan fiction stuff with people reading it and giving you feedback. So a lot of this stuff starts off there. And if some of our viewers are like going, well, that looks like not terribly great production values, there's a couple reasons for that. And maybe if it gets picked up and maybe republished with, you know, better production values or better art or something like that, that's a trajectory that many of these go on.
That's I think you're right. Right. There's clearly an influence of self-publishing. I can even, like, looking here at my copy of Critical Failures.
Yeah, right?
This is clearly a self-published book. Right. This is I don't know if at this point he's working with a publisher or not. Maybe by this point he is, with the number of novels he's written, or maybe not. I don't know. But is it required? Is it necessary? Before we run out of time, I want to bring up, Dan, one of my sort of favorite left field examples of lit RPG, and it's going to push the production value, and it's going to push the media format, because this is a film, and in particular, it is Jumanji: Welcome to the Jungle.
Oh, have you seen
Jumanji: Welcome to the Jungle, Dan?
I like these movies a lot. I'm surprised I didn't think about it. Actually, I actually really like these movies a lot. And you know what? I'm a huge fan of every one of these actors. They couldn't have picked a better cast. And I personally really like these more than I would have expected. But man, if you get a cast like that, you can almost do no wrong.
Super good. And of course, this is allegedly, right, the second movie first. This is 2017 coming out as a sequel to a 1995 Robin Williams movie. And say what you will about the Robin Williams movie and whether or not that counts as lit RPG, I would say the second movie very much lit RPG. Right, they've translated it now, instead of being sucked into a board game, a video game, and all the video game tropes are present. They have lives. They are playing characters. The characters have skills. They're very conscious of being in different bodies than the ones that they were in real life, right? And it's way funnier than I ever thought it had any right to be honest.
I'm embarrassed I didn't think of this as an example. What a great example. When I, you know, first started touching on, like, Dungeon Crawler Carl, at some point I was like, this feels, what is this, what movie does this feel like? Running Man. I guess it feels like Running Man. And then I realized that in the book, he explicitly calls this out, is the narrator. He says, well, this is really more like Running Man than anything else. Mm-hmm. So that's the zone where you're at. So you've seen this kind of idea in movies, this kind of, or what was the other thing I was thinking of? Free Guy, right? With Ryan Reynolds. I like Jumanji more, frankly, for what it's worth. Free Guy, I thought, was cleverish and watchable. So you've seen this kind of thing. I think that sometimes in comics, you'll have like a one-off. Like, it's fairly common, like a one-off. Oh, we fell into a video game for one episode, or Mojo World or Arcade or something like that. But like a whole ongoing series like that, that's newish.
Yeah,
I got to throw one negative comment just to be perfectly balanced. So me reading Dungeon Crawler Carl, the language is simple. The language is, by my standards, pretty simple. And if I do, you know, Vance, someone like that is playing with language and they're crafting the sentences in an elaborate way specifically to challenge the reader. My limited experience, that's something I'm not getting out of this particular work. And, you know, maybe I'm broken because I've seen what's his name that wrote A City on Mars speak of it as a very dense scientific work. And my take was exactly the opposite. It's like, well, this is pretty light and fluffy. But look, I'm a guy that reads mathematical texts for decades. So my standard for what counts as a dense text is completely blasted, blown away. That's the one thing that I would be perfectly upfront about my take on like reading Dungeon Crawler Carl.
The funny thing is, Dan, while I agree with your analysis, I will say for me, it is a pro rather than a con. I enjoy the lightness of this book. Right here is a 600 page fat book that I will go through in maybe a weekend. And that is just delightful to me. That is, it's a different style of reading for sure. And it scratches a different itch. There, you know, it's great for me for like, I'm getting ready to go to bed and I just want a little light reading to just, you know, relax my brain and get myself ready to go to sleep, as opposed to something that's really going to engage me and force me to think a lot. I don't know. To me, it fills the same place as, say, Jumanji versus maybe a more artsy, you know, thinking movie. Jumanji, I did not have to think hard to watch, and I laughed like an idiot. Sorry.
My bedstand over there, I currently have a physics book from 1928 that is my my grab something to read while I'm...
Yeah, there are some times when I want books that are going to challenge my brain and make me think hard about the text, and there's certainly books that I prefer that is just a nice light entertainment, not a nice bit of fun.
I think that's fair. I think our viewers are properly notified about what they're getting in some of that material.
Dan, we are out of time, which is very disappointing to me because I had a few other examples I wanted to talk about, but such is life.
Sorry.
Any final thoughts on Lit RPG?
I'm glad it might not quite be in my personal wheelhouse. So I have my literature. I do like short stories more than really, really indefinitely long series. In my gaming, you've heard me saying this before, I'm working more towards immersion, and I specifically want less stats talk in my games rather than more. That's something I've been working in my game. So Lit RPG is obviously leaning very hard in the opposite direction from that. And the style, the writing is maybe not exactly for me. Dan Collins is not what I'm looking for in literature. So like Dungeon Crawler Carl, clever, heartfelt, legitimately good observations, some funny stuff. It's maybe not my favorite genre of work, but I'm glad it's in the world and I'm glad people are enthusiastic about it.
I, for one, really enjoy, I find, the trope of being sucked into an alternate world that is that adheres to a rigid set of rules that the player can, that the main character of the story, can figure out and manipulate. I think that's just, for some reason to me, that's fascinating. Often a great place for humor, to poke fun of the games, the very activities we do, right? And just the Ouroborean, is that a word? Quality,
yes.
Of the fact that we have a game that emerged from inspiration of written fiction that is now generating a new type of fiction, which is in turn being built into a game. That just delights me to no end.
It is wild to live through history. It is wild to live through culture evolving. Right. It is good to be in the world and see that.
Viewers, if you have thoughts on your favorite Lit RPG that you wish we had covered, you want to quibble about what does or does not count as Lit RPG, or you have specific thoughts of some of the books we reviewed today, please leave us a comment here in the YouTube video. We'd love to hear from you. Maybe that will inspire future discussion for us down.
Definitely. And remember that you can like, follow, and subscribe to us. We're on YouTube, Twitch, Facebook, TikTok, GitHub, places like that. We have the handle Wandrian DMs on all those sites. So please look for us there and power up that like button.
If you prefer to listen to us in audio-only podcast format, you can do so. Those files are available for free on our website, wanderingdms.com. Also through various third-party carriers like iTunes and Spotify and Pocket Cast. If you're listening to the show right now on one of those other sites and they offer the ability to do so, please rate and review our show. That helps other users of that site find us, and we really appreciate it.
We really do. And of course, big thanks to our patrons who support the show here. If you'd like to join them, please visit patreon.com/wanderingdms, and you'll see that every one of our tiers gets you access to a private Discord server where the conversation about gaming and literature and modeling and horror and science fiction, everything is happening 24/7 around the clock with just the smartest patrons on the interwebs. So we'll hope you'll join us there. And like Paul said at the top of the hour, we'll be there in about 10 minutes for a live video after chat. And we'll get to touch base with a bunch of other observations that you may have. And all the great chat that went by while we were furiously debating the pros and cons of Lit RPG today. So we need to learn more. And that's a great opportunity for us to get more of your thoughts there on our live video after chat. We'll see there. Now, we're both there today. Am I right, Paul?
I will be there.
Great.
Will you?
Wonderful. Because I will. Because sometimes like some of us are doing gaming right before the show, and others are doing gaming right after the show. So sometimes one of the other of us are rapidly traveling either to or from the show. But today, good news, we're both there today. So we'll see. Hope to see our patrons there in a couple minutes. And of course, don't forget, we are live every Sunday at 1 p.m. Eastern time. So please join us again next week for another thought-provoking discussion.
We'll see you then.